CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. You can find me on Twitter at MattMooreCBS or at HP Basketball if you want stats that are way too in-depth for anyone to actually be able to use. You can reach James Herbert at Outside the NBA, and he joins me now to have a conversation about this close, tough series in the Eastern Conference as the Raptors really have shown that they're ready to... No, that is not what happened at all. That is not the case. That is not the situation. So I will start here. I'm willing to just go ahead and give him a pass because Lowry's out. Like, this is an easy out for everybody. The Cavs get to advance in a sweep. We can all just say, well, you know, Lowry was out, so it doesn't even really count. And then we can just move on from things. Do you want to go that route?
If you want to be extra nice to them, then sure. But, I mean, they got blown out with Lowry in the lineup, too. So, I don't know. Like, I don't – because Lowry was out, like, I don't want to, like, crap on them for last night's performance. Because, I mean, they stayed with him for three quarters. DeRozan was great. And then the Cavs just went nuts and were just like, hey, we're better than you, and went on a 20-3 run. And honestly, when it was close at halftime, I was just like, wow, like, look at these guys without Lowry. That's surprising. Like, they were playing better than I thought they would. Because Lowry's super important to this team. But, I mean, I think at the same time, like, we can acknowledge that and not really fault them for dropping game three without him. But the fact that it escalated as quickly as it did, and the fact that they're down 3-0 now. I mean, you're kidding yourself if you think that this is the only issue here is that Lowry's out of the lineup, and otherwise everybody else just played to their fullest, just played right up to their potential and matched up as well as everybody thought, and it was just a couple of bounces that could have gone their way. Like, no, like, the Cavs have been the way better team. I thought this series was going to be closer than it is. And, I mean, we can go down the line, like up and down the Raptors roster and talk about who has been mostly at fault here if you want. But I don't know that it's really worth doing that. Like, the Cavs have just steamrolled them.
LeBron's good. LeBron is a good basket. And I don't know. We've been doing that joke. Is he, though?
LeBron good? What? I want to see more.
We've been doing this joke for years now. So-and-so's good at basketball, but I think here's the thing. We're in an era of very disparate parity where the great teams are so much better than the good teams. And the good teams are so much better than the bad. And it's all built upon the collection of Warriors talent, specifically, that has created something special. But in the Eastern Conference, I really want to be clear on this, because I was arguing with our editor, Brad, last week, because he was like, you know, if you take LeBron off that team, like, they still win the East. And I was like, no, they do not. They do not win the East. The Celtics probably win the East. Well, the Celtics are the
Celtics
Wizards.
Did win the East in the regular season.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the important thing. Like, the Celtics or the Wizards, right, or the Raptors win the East. Like, they do not. Like, Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving cannot take you there. Like, you just can't. Because you don't have the defense, you don't have the playmaking. You know, and it's crazy just because it's like, LeBron really is just that dominant. Like, he's just that dominant because he's killing you with his efficiency and with his passing, and you're throwing everything at him. And it's like, the more that you throw at him, the more he makes it hurt. Like, the more you do to try and slow him down, the worse it gets for you. That's a
level. I was thinking about this, like, I've been kind of skeptical about the Cavs all season just because I thought their defense was, like, such a giant red flag during the regular season. But, like, let's think about, like, if we rewind to, like, when LeBron went back. And when we knew they were getting Kevin Love, and we were talking about, like, maybe this will be the best offense we've ever seen in our lives. Like, that was literally, like, the discussion that we were having, is, like, how many points can these guys put up? Like, nobody's going to be able to stop this. And that was before they got Channing Frye. It was before they got J.R. Smith. It was before they got Kyle Korver. It's like, now they have, like, not only, like, good shooting around them, they have, like, some of the best shooters in the league around those three guys. Like, that is an offensive formula that is just about impossible to solve. And it's like, I kind of look at, like, we're going to get to the Spurs-Rockets series later, but, like, the way that the Spurs kind of defended Houston, like, just, like, trying to take away the paint and take away three-point shooters at all costs, like, to do that against the Cavs is like even more difficult than doing it against the Rockets, which the Spurs are like have incredibly actually done it. And I'm not sure another team, I'm not sure that many other teams could do it as effectively, but like to just have the discipline to stay with those shooters, like is really tough when it's freaking LeBron James that's going to be the one creating one-on-one or Kyrie Irving even doing that. Like it's just so tough. And like the defensive flaws are still there, but in the end, like if they play pretty good defense and their offense is as nuts as it is, then like they can just outclass teams. And I think I underestimated like just how quickly they'd get back to this level. While we all talked about the fact that they, you know, they seemed like they didn't care that much at points in the regular season. We all knew that they flipped the switch the year before, and it seems like that's happened. Like it seems like they're on a whole different level than they were when they didn't need to be on this level.
Well, here's what happened. Last year they didn't look impressive, and we were all like, I don't know, can they really flip the switch? And then they flipped it, and then they came in and were kind of like, and we're kind of like, don't think we can't flip the switch. We can flip the switch whenever we want. And then they play worse to be like. And fooled everyone into being like, I don't know. I don't think this is a switch flip thing, man. Like, I just don't think that they're that good. Like, I don't know. Like, it's not just – no. Like, look, they're worse than last year. This is the line. And the Cavs are like, nah-uh-uh. We can flip the switch whenever we want. Because you mentioned the defense. Guess who has the best net rating or best defensive rating in the second round? Your Cleveland Cavaliers.
I bet the Cavs do now. Yeah,
by the way, it's not just that they have a good one. Like in the regular season, a good mark was honestly like 104 to 105. That's how crazy the regular season was in terms of offense, right? They have a 99 defensive rating right now, James. Like I know
against a team that was an elite offense in the regular season
that we were talking about that for like a couple of weeks was like the Raptors are on pace to have the best offense in history, and they have a 99 defensive rating.
Yeah.
The Warriors, and, by comparison, have a 101, and you say like that's only 2 points higher. That's 2 points is actually a big deal in these conversations. That's like the Cavaliers have played phenomenal defense in these games. Yes, Kyle Lowry was out in game 3. I understand that, but like at some level, we probably need to start saying that maybe like the defensive flaws aren't there. Like if the Warriors exploit them, it's because the Warriors are able to exploit everybody. It's not because the Cavs are bad defensively. That's the difference. Is like it's going to take something really special from either two teams in the next round because the Cavaliers and look, they're getting it done with Kyle Korver and they're getting it done with Kevin Love and they're getting it done with Richard Jefferson and they're getting it done with Channing Frye. Like they are playing.
I mean, RJ isn't even playing, but yes,
yeah, like they're playing great basketball.
Korver's always been a good team defender. Like that's always been a thing. His thing was just like he's clearly lost a step. Like he's not as fast as he used to be.
Exactly.
But like when the Cavs are as connected as they've been in the playoffs, when they've executed the game plan the way they have, that doesn't really matter.
Right.
Like Tristan Thompson's going to clean up some things. LeBron is going to clean up some things. They're going to force some turnovers. They're going to get out on the break. Even though that didn't happen as much in the first three quarters last night, but it happened when they needed it to. Yeah, I think it's time to start like talking about how special this Cavs team is again because they weren't showing it for a while, and now with LeBron playing like this and the role players fitting in as well as they have, like I think they've answered a lot of the questions that I had about them and that a lot of people had about them heading into the playoffs. I'm like, are they getting help from the Raptors underperforming? Yeah, of course. Like you look at some of their role players, like the fact they went 2 for 18 on 3-pointers in game 3, that's not all Cleveland's defense. It's just not. It's guys missing shots that part, like one of the most important parts of their job is to miss shots. Now, like when you talk about roster construction, like I think there is a big difference between having guys who shoot like 34% to 38% as your shooters, which the Raptors generally do outside of like Lowry, versus having guys like Channing Frye and Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith, who like you just don't leave those guys. Like the Cavs are playing off of P.J. Tucker and Patrick Patterson and Norman Powell and Corey Joseph. Even though these guys can shoot threes, they're not showing them that same respect. If the Raptors had a Kyle Korver, that you better believe like they're sticking to that guy. And that's kind of a stark difference that we're seeing in this series. So I think there are plenty of Toronto fans who are like, why are these guys not making threes? But at the same time, like credit Cleveland's game plan. Like They're trying to stop the things that Toronto does the best, and they're surrendering what it does like pretty well. And in the with the pressure of the playoffs, and when the offense hasn't had a ton of rhythm in general, like it hasn't. They haven't done it pretty well. They've done it terribly.
Some numbers for you. Tristan Thompson has an 84.8 on-court defensive rating in the series. Off-court, the Cavaliers have a 139.2 with Tristan off. So that is a large number. That is that's a 55-point differential on defense from when Tristan Thompson sits in the 39 minutes he has across three right. games to when he's on the court in the 105 that he's been on. this is a killer. Kyrie Irving has a 90.7 defensive rating. You are not going to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers if Kyrie has a 91.
Well, how many of his minutes have been alongside Tristan too?
Sure,
like that's part of it.
And this is,
and also I like what Lou has done with the like the second unit that has generally been so bad defensively. Like he's found a couple of spots in these games to play Tristan with LeBron and shooters.
Yeah.
Whereas Fry used to be the guy there to just maximize the spacing, but they're like, well, we're still going to have pretty good spacing if Korver's out there. And if we have Tristan, then we can get stops too. And like that was the lineup that separated. At the beginning of the fourth quarter, the Cavs had LeBron and Tristan Thompson and Korver, and I think like Shump and JR maybe. I think that was the lineup. And or maybe it was Shump and Darren Williams. And that's a versatile lineup, and it can spread the floor, but also like that's a good lineup defensively. And that's the lineup that won them the game.
This is another killer. The Cavs are plus 4.8 when LeBron's on the bench for 26 minutes. Now, it's 26 minutes across three games, so it's, you know, it's 9 minutes.
Not much. A lot of that is garbage time.
Yeah.
Because there has been garbage time in each of these games.
But it's just indicative that the Raptors are not able to beat them when LeBron's on. Like, you're never going to beat the Cavs if you don't beat them when LeBron's off the floor.
Yeah, you have to take advantage of those minutes in every game.
You've got to beat them when these guys, you know, and they have not been able to. And okay, so you're going to start, you'll be writing the Raptors kind of look ahead whenever they get done, probably.
Do you want to do it now, or do you want to do the postmortem after they're officially dead?
I think that we should talk about, I think there's stuff to talk about around it. For me, I think I've been thinking about this all day, and I just, you know, I do think this is a good team. I don't think the Raptors are a bad team. I think the Raptors are a good team. And I think that there are pieces that I would want to keep from the squad. I think that this team won a lot of games, and I would keep Norman Powell, and I would keep Serge Ibaka, and I would keep Corey Joseph, and I would keep PJ Tucker, and I would keep Patrick Patterson, and I would keep Kyle Lowry, and I would keep DeLon Wright, and I would keep Fred VanVleet, and I would keep Jakob Poeltl, and I would keep Pascal Siakam.
Our listeners are shocked that you haven't said you'll keep DeMar DeRozan, your favorite player in the NBA.
And he's such a good dude. Have I said that DeMar's a good dude?
You said it. You said it, but every time it hasn't sounded like a compliment.
He's such a nice young man. Him and JV, I would move.
I think JV's got to go. Like, I'm with you there.
I would re-sign Lowry, and I would say, hey, look, we've got the starting all-star in the Eastern Conference backcourt. Come on. Like, you could add star power, and I would look for shooters and defenders. I would look for guys that do the two things that he does not do. Like,
but you know what's tough though?
What?
Like, I mean, maybe if you're actually trading DeMar, you can do that. I don't know. I don't know that that's something that's on the table. Maybe it is. If they get swept, maybe everything's on the table. But I think short of that, like, every team in the league wants to trade their plotting center for shooters and defenders. Like, yep. I don't know what the market is for JV there.
Well.
Like, I think if they had done it a year or two ago,
here's the key.
They would have got a lot more.
Here's the key. For several years, there weren't any dumb GMs. We just didn't have any. Like, for years in the 2000s, it was like the league was just rampant with guys that you were just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, just surrendering picks all over. I mean, think about the Thunder. Like, the Thunder got, like, multiple first-round picks, like, every year. It was just crazy. Like, you know, Billy King. Billy King was around. Billy King and Billy Knight ran franchises. So you could do stuff. And then it kind of went away, and there was a bunch of smart guys making sound decisions. And now, now we have the Bulls, who are not new, but they're just, because they're not kind of anchored by Derrick Rose, they're having to find their own way, and that's problematic. There's the Bulls. There's the Magic. There's the Lakers. We don't know about. Magic could be great, or they could be really star-drawn. And the Knicks. So
you are not naming teams that are desperately in need of a starting center, however.
No! No! No one's going to trade for JV. Like, that point is moot. Like, no one can trade their centers right now. No one can. I mean, look at Denver. Like, Denver gave up a pick to get rid of Nurkic. And everyone's like, yeah, you morons! And it's like, no one can find anyone to trade for these guys. Like, the Magic have been trying to move Vucevic forever. Can't do it. Vucevic is good. Can't do it. The Wizards are probably going to have a problem if they try and trade with Gortat. No one can move these guys. If you have a non-rim-protecting center, it does not matter, like, how good they are at anything else. You're not going to get value for them. You know? So, however, if like I said, you package him with DeMar DeRozan, you can get a lot back. There's lots of stuff you can get back.
Yeah, I mean, that would certainly be really interesting.
The problem with that is if you trade DeMar, like, you have to tell Kyle if you're going to trade DeMar.
And well, this is what I was going to say. Like, that will be interesting, but, yeah, like, the thing about that is, like, you are trying to recruit Kyle Lowry to stay with the team under your plan.
Right.
And it'd be like the Morris twins thing. Like, you can't tell them both of them are in this together and then trade one of them.
Right.
Like, Lowry would go nuts. Like, those two are really, really close.
Right.
And they're proud of what they've built together. And I do not think that you could convince Kyle Lowry that DeMar DeRozan is the problem with this team.
That's
how they have to get better.
I do love, though, that DeMar had his classic cleanup game in game three. Like, one of the worst.
How good was he, man? Like, the traps that seemed to, like, flummox him before, he was just like, screw it, I'm just going to split these, and you're going to foul me, and I'm going to score anyway.
His classic cleanup game after he has one of his worst performances. Classic. Not my fault. Ain't on me. He did not take a three-pointer in that game. He had three assists. He had 37 points on 12.
He would have had more assists if the guys were making any shots, man. Like, they were 2-for-18 on threes. That, you cannot fault the three assists from him. And what, do you want him shooting three-pointers? Like, is he a good enough three-point shooter that you want him to? Like, I don't know.
No, I know. I don't. I don't want him shooting three-pointers, but again, like, a lot of this gets down to, it's not about, so you can argue about how good a player is, and you can argue about how meaningful a player being good is. That's the difference that we're talking about here. It's what we've been talking about with DeRozan on this podcast for weeks now, it's not whether DeMar DeRozan is good or not. DeMar DeRozan is obviously a great player. He's a fantastic player. It's whether or not what he does well matters, and what he does well matters. What he does well does not matter. It does not make any sort of influence, because he scored 37 points, and they lost by 20.
Well, I mean, he scored 36 of those points, and they were only down by 2 at the end of the third quarter, and then when he didn't, they got killed. So it's kind of, it's like they needed every one of those points to be in that game, especially with Lowry out. So I don't think that's the best example to use if your point is that his production isn't meaningful.
I will go down your road. I will relent on my desire to actually make this team good, and we'll go down your road of...
No, listen, I think there has been a case to be made the entire time, that if what you're trading DeMar DeRozan for is more shooting, and you're getting some playmaking from somewhere, right? Unless you're turning this into Kyle Lowry is the James Harden of this team or the Russell Westbrook of this team, really it'd be the Westbrook, because Harden still has Lou Williams, Eric Gordon, even Beverly that can, like, run a pick and roll. Like, there's such a lack of playmaking on this team beyond, like, Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, and Corey Joseph, that, like, if you're trading DeRozan, I think not only do you need these 3-and-D guys that every other team in the league wants to, you also need some more playmaking to come from somewhere. So I think if you want to remodel this, so, like, Lowry's usage rate goes, like, sky high. And Lowry's usage rate actually went down this year because of the progress that DeMar made, and Lowry did that willingly. But if you want to tell Lowry, okay, the offense is yours, you're going to run pick and roll every single time, and then we're going to get, like, some more shooting, and we're going to get, like, somebody to come in and play next to you and be a playmaker off the bench, that kind of thing, then, like, yeah, there's an argument you could replace DeMar that way. by just having the offense going somewhere else. But like, as it currently stands, like, I think this team needs his playmaking. Like, they don't have, like, they constructed a team, I think intelligently. Like, I think getting guys like Damari Carroll, like having Patrick Patterson around, like, these are theoretically really great fits for a team that has two ball dominant guards. Like, would you want maybe another playmaker next to them at the three? Sure, but that wasn't really the biggest need at the time. If they had like prime healthy Damari Carroll, who could actually guard the bigger scoring forwards in the league and hadn't lost a step and didn't have all this knee trouble, then I think it'd look different. Like, I think they built a very specific team, and much like when we talked about the Thunder this year, like, I don't think it's a case that like you lose DeRozan and you don't have a whole bunch of other issues to solve. So I think if you are trading him, like, it has to be the right trade. It's not to me as simple as like, oh, he scores a lot of points, but he's not the greatest defender. And he doesn't space the floor. So what is he really doing for you? Like, I think he's doing a ton for this team, but there are legitimate ways to lose him and bring back other guys to kind of reconfigure it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and this is all pointless because, like, Masai's never going to trade DeMar. Like, they're going to go, they will go down with the ship. They believe in this core, and they'll stick with this because he's an all-star, and they've got two stars, and they'll sell tickets, and they'll make the playoffs, and maybe LeBron will get hurt 1 year, and they can make a run. That's like, you know, it's like, it's not...
But I don't think we know. Some of this isn't even their control. Like, does Lowry want to stay right now? Does Ibaka want to stay? Like, I'll tell you what, I don't think Ibaka's going to want to stay if they tell him you're going to start a power forward again.
Why?
Because he knows, like everybody else, that he's best as a center.
You think so?
That's where he wants to play. I mean, he's on the record saying he prefers playing center. He prefers being around the basket.
Well,
so, like, to me, those are, like, they're questions that the organization has to answer here. And I think, like, one thing is, like, I'm, like, pretty certain that they're not going to have both Ibaka and Valanciunas on the roster next year, one way or another. And then what they do with Patterson in free agency, what they do with Tucker, like, these things could work out multiple different ways. I truly don't know how much this loss affects it, though. Like, if they get swept like everybody's expecting, or even if it's a gentleman's or whatever, like, this was not the goal, as we talked about. Like, the reason they made all these moves was they thought they could close the gap. Now, maybe because Kyle's not there, that gives them a little bit of wiggle room to say, like, who knows what would have happened if he was healthy in the home games. But right. I kind of don't buy that.
Like, I don't either.
I could see a shakeup, and, like, Lowry is so hard to read. Like, I know he's comfortable in Toronto, and I know he loves DeMar. But, I mean, look, like, this is his big payday, and if he thinks he can go somewhere else and have a better chance of winning after keeping on losing to LeBron, maybe he does that. Like, I don't know. He has not – this is not the same situation as DeRozan last year ending the season and telling everybody sitting there at the Raptors practice facility that his number one option is to stay in Toronto and be really cool to spend his whole career with one team. Like, Lowry has been – almost silent on this issue. Like, he talked to Woj at the beginning of the season and said he intended to opt out and go to free agency, and that's all he said. And so I'm not.
It's a funny kind of double thing here, right? Because it's like, we have to keep DeMar. Why? Well, he and Lowry are like best friends, and like they're never like they want to spend their whole life, like their whole playoffs together. And like, you can't break those two up. It's like breaking up brothers. And it's like, what's Lowry's position on free agency? Well, he's got to test the market. We'll see. And it's like, well,
that's the thing, we don't know. Like, it's really hard because I think we're trying to handicap two things at the same time. Like, we're trying to figure out what the Raptors should do when they just saw this like team that they constructed with the idea like we're going to challenge the Cavs just fail in that goal completely. So what do they do about that? But there's also, what does Kyle want at this stage of his career? What does Ibaka want? Like, Ibaka's been to the finals before.
Right.
And I think he likes Toronto. And I think if they offer him more money than anybody else, like, the Raptors are pretty damn confident they're going to keep him. But also, like, as soon as you're talking about these guys getting the max or near max, I mean, Kyle Lowry max, if they give him the full 5 years, which we don't know if they'll do. Like, the Hawks didn't want to do that with Horford. But they give him the full 5 years. That's a $202 million contract. That's him making $45 million 5 years from now.
Oof.
Like,
oof.
And it's tough because he's at the age where generally point guards, they don't, like, decline immediately, but they decline during the life of that contract. And then you look and you're like, well, he didn't play that many minutes at the start of his career. He was a backup. It's not quite the same. And then you're like, well, he keeps getting hurt late in the season. So I don't know how you calculate all that.
It's tough. That's really tough. So the Raptors are done. Rockets Spurs. Interesting. Interesting, interesting, interesting. A fascinating game three. The swings are hilarious. I just think that they're really funny. Because after game one, I don't think the conversation was quite how it's being portrayed. The conversation is being portrayed as everyone said the Spurs were done. No one said that. No one said after game one the Spurs
were
done.
No one said the Spurs were done. Some people were like, I don't know how they're going to defend this.
Yeah. There's like, a lot of people. I was one of those people. Yeah, I was like, I don't know how they're going to do this with two bigs on the floor. And I asked Popovich, I was like, are the two bigs a concern for you? And he said, we went big against Houston all year. Like, we think we can win this way. And they have. They've won the last two games with bigs on the floor. By getting better offense. In game two, they got better offense from their guards. And in game three, they got it from the big guys. And so,
and in game three, their defense was awesome.
Their defense was awesome. And a lot of that was the Rockets shot 3 of 14 on floaters in game. I'm writing about this for today. In game three, they shot 3 of 14 on floaters. The 11 misses there are not what's important. The 14 that they took is what's important. You cannot take floaters if you're the Rockets. It's not just that those are not the shots that they want. They're bad at them. Harden, I've... an executive with Houston told me the other day that you've watched more of James Harden's game than I have. And I was like, I don't know if that's true, but I've spent a lot of time on it, and I do know his game in and out. And no kidding, like, he's terrible at floaters. And so he can't be taking those. Patrick Beverley can't be taking those. Eric Gordon can't be taking those. They've got to be at the
rim. Also, if you're taking those in this series, you're taking them over, like, 2 7-footers, usually.
Yeah, which is why they're missing them. That's why they're missing them. It's like, it's Powell and LaMarcus. And the guards have done a fantastic... Like, Danny Green was really the... Like, everyone else is going to get credit. Danny Green was why they won that game last night defensively. That's why they won that game with Danny Green. Because he closed exceptionally hard on shooters and then recovered and then swiped. He just did everything. He was brilliant. He was just terrific. And they're finding shooters. There are certain things that the Rockets are leaning into. So I just went through every possession that the Rockets took in game three, and I looked at when they started their offense. So the first pass to initiate a set, or the first screen that a guy goes over, or the first cut that somebody makes. Like, all these things, right? Like, these are all, like, things that I would define as, like, the beginning of a possession in terms of how when you initiate your offense. And in the first quarter, when they were plus two, it was 19 seconds is when they got their first action in the first quarter. That's where they won it. In the second quarter, it was 17.7 seconds. And in the third quarter, which is really when they lost this game, even though they were only outscored by two, they were at 15.9 seconds. They weren't initiating until under 16
seconds.
Yeah,
they can't survive doing that.
Harden particularly, they closed the gap to one. And then Harden basically went into its possession basketball, and he dribbled the life out of the ball and tried to attack them that way. And they cannot do that. So I asked.
They should be running off of makes. They should be running every time.
Great point, James. Great point. Because that's what I asked today at practice. I asked James Harden. I said, "Do you guys need to run off of makes?" And his response was really interesting because he said, "Yeah, that's something we." But you know, the really big thing is defense. He stopped himself. Which was interesting because he initially said, yeah, that's something we talked about, and then went back to, we've got to get stops, and that's where we need to run, and we've got to do these other things. And it's true, they do have to get stops. And it's going to be hard for them because they can't go big because that gets them away from what they do. People are going to kill them for not having...
Do the other way. Go Ryan Anderson at five if you're doing anything. Like, make Powell guard that. instead of standing by the basket.
I agree. And the other thing that's problematic is they need to have another guy that they can drive on the floor. So one of the things that they really did in game three was Harden would push the ball up and Ariza would have an opportunity, but LaMarcus was closing on him and Ariza can't put the ball on the deck and drive past him. And so they would just have to reset the offense. But if you have multiple guards in that position, that really screws them up. They've got to go small against the big lineups. They've been going small against the small lineups, and that's not going to work. You need to go small against the big lineups is what Houston needs to do. Go smaller. Go to your three-guard set against their big lineup and just be like, all right, take all those twos you want. We're going to run. And it's tough because these are adjustments that D'Antoni really doesn't want to make, and we're really at the point where you know, everyone's going to kind of credit Popovich, and I'm like, look, Popovich made tactical adjustments with how they defended, but Popovich stuck with what he does. They haven't gone small. Jonathan Simmons is playing more and playing great at power forward. He's giving them awesome minutes. But for the most part, their damage has been done with two bigs. They're still playing two bigs, and that's where they're winning these games. What they've done is the Spurs are winning this series because they're playing their type of basketball and winning that way, not adjusting to what the Rockets are doing. That's not what's happening.
Right, but I will say, like, the defensive strategy that they've employed on the pick and roll has been, like, really, really smart, though.
Well,
like,
putting Kawhi Leonard on James Harden, yeah, was pretty smart. I'm not saying he didn't do anything.
Yeah, no, but
I'm not saying
he didn't
do anything. But, I mean, what are you specifically referring to?
I'm saying, like, the way that the Spurs are defending, whether it's Kawhi, whether it's Green, whether it's Ginobili, like basically putting their hands up so they can't foul and like just leaning their chest into Harden and backing up and just having the bigs just drop all the way back. Like, we're not going to let you get all the way to the rim without contesting it. We're also not going to foul you. So if you want to go for this floater, then that's fine. And then having the perimeter defenders on the shooters just like not help at all. Like, they're just actually sticking right with the shooters. So, they're making Harden into a scorer and not a playmaker. And, like, they were fine with him getting 43. And I just think that is the way that you should play Houston, I think, with this personnel. And maybe the Rockets can find a way to burn them. I think the way to burn them is to play Anderson at the five, so you can't have Power LaMarcus just, like, staying all the way back. But we'll see.
I disagree with that assessment, and here's why. One, it's tough to be like, they played such great pick-and-roll defense on James Harden. Well, he had 43 points. So, like, if you ask Popovich, he would say, like, well, he had 43 points. We didn't play that great. That's what Greg Popovich would say. The other thing is that I've gone through every possession, and the big key is their shooters are open. They're collapsing way more than you would think. Now, they're closing exceptionally hard, and that's doing damage. But a lot of it is Harden is continuously looking for the lob because it killed him in game one, and he has never quite gotten back to not looking for that as much. And the Spurs have basically said, "You're not getting the lob anymore. We're done." Like, no. Nene and Capella are not going to beat us. No.
I mean, Nene was completely taken out of the game.
Right. And the other issue is that, so when they do that, the help is coming from guys that are behind Harden. So when Harden gets into the paint, they're crashing from the wings. And the Rockets shooters are too high for him to be able to find them. Like, if Harden were to jump on these possessions and do, like, a LeBron pass, which is, like, jump up in the air and turn and then find a shooter, which is impossible to do and really difficult. But if he were to do that, he would have open looks for shooters for days, for catch-and-shoot opportunities.
Maybe that's what we'll see.
And that's maybe what we'll see. But that's really where the issue is coming from, because I went back and was like, wow, like, they've got shooters here, and here, but there's no way for him to find them, and he's purposefully not because he's looking for that lob. He keeps waiting for that lob to open up, and the Spurs are like, nope. Like, yeah. you can make contested layups over us, but you're not going to get the lob. That's not going to happen. I really do think that Eric Gordon's going to have a big game four. And here's the key. Is like, look, if the Spurs win game four, it's over. They'll have taken the past three, and they'll be in great position to win in five back in San Antonio. Regardless of 3-1 and what it's meant the last couple of years, that's just the reality. Is like,
I don't want to say anything's over after 3-1 anymore. I just can't do it. I get what you're saying, That's the smart thing to say, but I can't do it.
Right, and we have seen three in the last 2 years. We saw Rockets over Clippers, we saw Warriors over Thunder, and we saw Cavs over Warriors. So, mm-hmm. It's happened three times in 2 years.
It's too fresh to me.
Yeah. So it's definitely possible, but at the same time, you know, San Antonio has taken control of the series, and they can just win these type of games where they just suck the life out of it and grind you down. No one here really expects that. I would say that. It's like everyone here is gonna like, this is gonna go long. This is gonna be a long series. This is gonna be the closest, toughest series that we're gonna see. Kelly Oubre is suspended. for game four in Washington on Sunday. They let him know this today, so they gave him a full day of warning so that they would be aware of it. What are your thoughts on that whole situation in Celtics Wizards?
I mean, he lost his mind. You could see the moment. Like, you could see it in his eyes. There was nothing that was going to stop him. I mean, it was crazy because he ran after Olynyk, and, like, the ref was in the middle, and he didn't care. Like, he still just went and pushed him. So, I mean, a suspension, like, he was obviously going to get kicked out, which was kind of funny watching it because he was so, like, he was waiting, and, like, it didn't seem like he was just resigned to the fact that he was going to get ejected, but he thought he'd been wronged because of those two screens, so he went nuts. And, I mean, I'm not the least bit surprised that he's now been suspended. I mean, you can't do that.
No, he lost his mind, and it's just a 19-year-old losing his marbles. Like, that's, he just lost his mind. I will say, however,
I think the first Kelly on Kelly fight in NBA history. I don't know if you can even call it a fight though, because Olynyk wasn't really doing anything.
Well, he didn't do anything in retaliation for the shove.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Kelly Olynyk.
Oh yeah, he certainly set two very hard and high screens on him. That's not what I meant.
And he's extending his arms. Like, that's the thing. Is like, I don't blame Oubre. Like, he lost his mind, but it's like, no, yeah, he's Olynyk's doing this. There is this kind of like, the Celtics really are trying to play this card of like, look at Kelly. Kelly could never do this. It's like, he tried to break Kevin Love's arm. What are we talking about here? Like, it's fine. I don't have a problem with, like, this is the playoffs. You know, like, this is what the playoffs are. Is tough screens and extra contact and all this stuff. And that's what it should be. Unless you're the Raptors who just roll over and die. But, like, everyone else is really competing.
Wow.
And but you also have to just be like, no. Like, Kelly's a little bit of a goon. I like him. I like his game. I think he's valuable.
I'm not going to call him a goon. But, I mean, those were iffy screens. I'll say that.
Yeah, they were more than iffy. They were not okay screens, and I don't think it matters that much because I don't think everybody's played well in the series. They'll hide IT on Bojanovic, and that's I just call him Bojanovic. Bogdanovic.
Bojanovic. I like that. No, I like Bojanovic.
Bojanovic, and that's what they'll do. And try and hope that they can hide him. They couldn't hide him in Game 3. Game 3 was a little bit more what most of us expected from Washington, and we'll see if they can hold it up. We'll see if Isaiah has another crazy game. But this one looks like it's going deep too, though. Like I think a lot.
I always thought this was going to go deep.
A lot of us. It's just funny how we could see these things coming, and it's the two, and it makes sense, right? It's the 1-4 versus or well, I guess it's not. It's the 2-3 in the East. I keep thinking the Cavs are number one. I cannot help it.
The 1 seed against the 4 seed is what it is.
The 1 versus 4 is really tough. And it's flipped in the other series. Do the Jazz get a game?
I don't know anymore. I mean, I thought they would at the start of the series, and now I don't know what to say, man.
You had such hope for the underdogs going into this round.
Well, I thought the crazy thing was I thought this was just going to be such a great second round, and it's like there hasn't been a single game decided by single digits yet. Like that's how this has gone. So that optimism is dead for me. So at this point, I'm just like, yeah, I mean, the Warriors can just take it. They can just sweep it. Not that before it, I was like, there's no way the Warriors are going to sweep it because that would be crazy. Like, they're just that good. But I haven't seen enough encouraging signs from Utah to predict anything other than doom for them.
Yeah, I just, you know, I still coming in, I didn't think they have enough firepower. And we've kind of seen that. I thought it was impressive. They got the pace where they wanted it to. That was what I thought was kind of impressive, is they got the pace where they wanted it to in game 2. So if they can get the, if they can keep it there, if they can keep the pace where they want it, and the role players shoot better at home, that's a formula for a win.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I thought coming in, was like, if they could dictate pace, then they'll have a shot. But, I mean, the Warriors, just the way that Draymond is playing defensively and then in transition, like, it's just been really tough. Like, he's just been all over the place. He's been incredible. And
one thing
he's been
I love,
shooting that well, too.
One thing I love is how crazy it is that in the regular season, it's he's playing well right now, means, like, this month, you know? And in the playoffs, guys will literally have, like, one great series and then a terrible series and then a good series and then a bad series. Like, it's crazy how it goes up and down. I'm very curious to see how Draymond's going to do next round, because sometimes he doesn't follow up great series with great series. Sometimes he follows up great series with not-so-great series. If you're the Spurs, or if you're the Warriors, you don't mm-hmm. care. You're like, we're going to roll anybody because we're the Warriors and we signed Kevin Durant. What do you got? But if you're the Warriors staff, who all coaches are kind of paranoid and crazy and neurotic, right? If you're the Warriors mm-hmm. staff, who are you? Who do you hope comes out of the Western Conference?
I still think I'd rather play the Spurs than the Rockets, but I mean, the way the Spurs are defending right now, I could see the argument for the other way.
Yeah. Here's the big key is they will run after makes, you know? Like, Curry's yeah. not going to slow it down. It really is on Harden. Harden's got to do that. Like, Harden's got to push the pace, and he can't get bogged down. That's a bit really big key. Anything else going on in the NBA that we missed? We talked about the shoes, a thing.
The Magic's general manager search doesn't seem like something that's really worthy of attention until they pick somebody. I don't know, man. I don't think there's really been that much.
Just doom from LeBron and the Warriors. That's the story of the NBA at this time.
I guess. I mean, I guess that's the story. Like, look, like, we're going to see some good teams lose in the playoffs soon, and then we can talk about a bunch of different things. But right now, we're sort of in this weird spot where it's like, let's just wait for the Raptors and Jazz to be eliminated before we talk about what their seasons have meant. And the other two series are, like, so up in the air right now, which is great. Like, they're great series. But it puts us in a little bit of a weird spot.
I want to see Guardians tonight. I'm excited about that.
Oh, hey.
I'm excited for that. You got free brunch today. That's exciting.
Yeah.
What's your go-to brunch move? What's your go-to brunch order?
My order? Well, I got this French toast that was really awesome. That very rarely fails me. My tip now is if you can go somewhere where you make a reservation and then they make you wait for like 40 minutes anyway, they might comp your food. So that's the tip of the day, if you can somehow finagle that, like I did accidentally today.
Sabotage your own reservation. That's the way to go.
Yes.
That's the go-to move. All right, that's James Herbert. I'm Matt Moore. We will catch you guys on Monday with more reaction from the Game 4s, and we'll probably know a lot more about where everything stands on Monday morning. Thanks, James.
Thank you, Matt.